Oh, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. I, of course, am the man whose name is in the title, Mr. Warren Hayes, and we are going to be talking about professional wrestling today, as we usually do here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. It's a professional wrestling talk show where we gab and talk and review and recap and create all sorts of expectations for the world of professional wrestling. And we're going to be doing that here tonight, August 27, 2020. If you're watching this live right now, because I record this live every Thursday night on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. We just finished an episode of AEW Dynamite. Everything is topsy-turvy as far as scheduling goes with our main promotions, NXT, AEW, and WWE. Everyone's doing all sorts of stuff, all sorts of screwy stuff. But my God, do we have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. And I am glad that I'm going to be talking about all this professional wrestling here tonight with a full live crowd of folks joining us here this evening, such as Tim Traver. How you doing, Tim? Longtime friend of the show. Good to see you. Another good longtime friend of the show, and also a personal friend as well. JPQ of the formerly of the No Particular Angle podcast. Good to see you, John. We also have Robert Larry, who's here as well. Good to see you, Robert. Daniel Price as well. Hello, hello. Thomas Gories is here. Sengir Vampire, also a Thomas. Good to see you as well, Tom. Anakin JMT is here as well. Who else we have? Kelly Tonjes is here. Good to see you. Throwback, thank you very much. Pat, hope you're having a good day. Thank you for dropping by. Alonzo Smith is here as well. How you doing, Alonzo? Good to see you. My God. Ben is here as well. Nikki just jumped in too. Sue Hines. Cameron Ramsey. My God, pal. Look at all the great people who are joining us here this evening. It is fantastic, and I appreciate you coming in. And if you are joining us here right now on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes Live, do consider giving the video a thumbs up. That stuff always really helps out a great deal. I can't tell you how much I appreciate having you here this evening. I'm going like this here because the chat is there, but you guys are here, like, right in front of me. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, thank you as well. I can't thank you guys enough. My audio numbers have been really going up, I wouldn't say dramatically, but systematically, let's put it that way, for a while. So I really do appreciate that you're taking the time to listen to this. And I can understand that it's more convenient for you to listen on podcasts, and, you know, that you can't necessarily make it on a Thursday night. That's fantastic. Oh, look at this. Dan Reed. How you doing, Dan, from Pro Wrestling Eve has joined us in the chat as well. Good to see you, Dan. Thank you for being here. Hope you're doing well, my friend. Hope you're doing well. So there you go. Thank you, podcast listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, patrons as well. If you want to show some support for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, a good way to do it is to become a patron of the show. Head on over to Mr. Warren Hayes, patreon.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. That's more like it. Head on over there, become a member, and then you can join us, me and the patrons, in the post stream that I do after this stream every Thursday on Patreon. Patrons only invited, though. And tonight we're going to be talking about, well, this Mount Rushmore nonsense from NXT that started up yesterday. Who's the main? We're going to be talking about that, and it's a lot of fun. Plus, tonight I am debuting calls on the show. Patrons will have the opportunity to call in and chat, because we always have the live chat going, but also voice chat. So we're going to be taking calls at the same time. Should be exciting. And how am I taking the voice calls? On our Discord, because I have a Discord. It'll be in the description of the show right here. If you want to join, lots of cool people hanging out there, talking wrestling, and who gather to chat about live events, whether it's WWE, AEW, New Japan, anything in between. There are always people there. come check it out. Come join the Discord. It is a good time. I have a very busy Saturday ahead of me. We've got a New Japan show on Saturday. Of course, Summer Struggle in Jingu. That's happening. It's a big show, big event, baseball stadium. I'm going to be reviewing it, recapping it immediately after the show, like at about 7:30 a.m. And I'm going to be joined by Mags, Darren Kirkby, who the podfather, who does all sorts of podcasts, Badlands, Why We Watch, Why Do You Watch, Why Should I Watch? He does all these podcasts, but Darren is going to be joining me Saturday morning, so be sure to check that out. And then after that, a couple of hours later, 11 a.m. in our usual spot when we do prediction shows, I'm going to be doing a WWE Payback prediction show with my guest, Vince Delgado. So that's going to be really, really cool. Be sure to come and check us out on both of those occasions, happening live, of course, per usual. You can also become a member, join the Mr. Warren Hayes channel here on YouTube. If you're a live viewer, it's a really great opportunity for you to unlock new emojis that you can use. So just head on over to the main channel page, hit the join button, become a member. It's a great way, a great way to support the show. Lots of ways to support the show. Whew. Want to say hello to the first lady of the Mr. Warren Hayes show, Kristen Ashley. She just joined us. Everyone, say hi to Kristen or else you're banned. No, I'm kidding. You won't be banned, but you should say hi to her because she's cool. I like her a lot. Speaking about liking things a lot, I like wrestling a lot. And man, I'm not kidding. Let's get to it. This is going to be, the whole show tonight is going to be one big weekly wrestling inspection. So might as well get right into it, right? I am not kidding, and I've said it 7-8 times so far, but I am not kidding. I was ready, or at least I think we'd have material for me to do a 3-hour show on everything that's going on this week. So we're gonna do the regular stuff, but I'm gonna break it down really by promotions as opposed to shows and things like that, because there's so much crisscrossy wibbly wobbly stuff. Ooh, we're not doing 3 hours. I said I could do it, but I'm not. Not going to do 3 hours. I respect you guys too much than to subject you to 3 hours of me. So we're going to start with New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to kick that off here tonight with some cool beans, because Kenta is the very first winner of the New Japan Cup, the New Japan USA Cup, I should say, tournament that they started up just recently for the New Japan guys who are stuck in North America, decided to do a New Japan Cup for the US. I'm telling you straight off the bat, here's the great thing about the New Japan USA Cup. It is my favorite tournament in New Japan. Why is it my favorite tournament in New Japan? Because I have successfully predicted all of the brackets from A to Z. So that is absolutely fantastic. That makes it automatically my favorite tournament. I got it all right. My entire bracketology to a T. I predicted Kenta and Dave Finley in the finals, and that's exactly what happened. It was a good match, but neither Finley or Kenta fought to their heights, I thought. And I was expecting Dave Finley to kick it up a notch, considering the type of match he was in against Kenta. I really thought he was going to knock it out of the park a little more than this. But hey, you know, it was okay. It was fine. It was far from being a bad match. But it's definitely one you can be like, oh, it's okay if I haven't seen it. Kenta wins, gets an upcoming, and they specified, upcoming US, IWGP US title shot, which is, as you know, currently held by one Jonathan Moxley. And the cool thing here, what was really interesting, after the match, Jeff Cobb came out to attack Kenta when they had their qualifier match a couple of weeks ago. Kenta, or at least Cobb, no, sorry, Kenta sort of screwed Jeff Cobb with a low blow out of a victory. So there's still some bad blood there. Now, the question that I have here is, does this mean that Jeff Cobb is the is he signed to New Japan? Because he's been saying recently in interviews, you know, it's like, oh, you know, whenever they're ready to announce where I'm going to go, whenever they're ready, I'll jump in. That's fine. Nothing's been announced yet, but I feel like they wouldn't be extending an angle with Kenta, who is a top tier player in New Japan, if Cobb didn't have some sort of formal agreement. Because when he lost, I was like, well, okay, that's freelancer Jeff Cobb who came in to give us a good match and then decided and went home until he gets called in again. But here, I don't know. I'm kind of feeling it. I think New Japan and Jeff Cobb is a great fit. And he can probably work different dates for other promotions as well. I'm good with it. I think that'd be great. You know what I forgot to mention? And I just realized, because I'm so excited to get into the wrestling. Another way for you to support the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Super chats. If you leave us a super chat, I will read it. I will read your question or comment right here, live on the air. That's what I usually do. And Tom left one earlier. Sengir Vampire, thank you. And he said, have a fun show tonight, Warren. Thank you very much. I'll try to. Anakin JMT left us a super chat as well. It says, thank you, by the way. He says, soccer. If you want to know what that's all about, you have to join the Discord. Because there's a bit of controversy over whether it's football or soccer. And Anakin left us another super chat saying, three-hour tour. You're not getting that tonight. No, sir. But thank you for the super chat. Jay White, we're going to continue the Cool Beans train. There's a lot of Cool Beans as far as New Japan goes. Jay White made his return since COVID in a tag team with Chase Owens, took on Flip Gordon and Brody King. He was back to his old tricks. The greatest heel in the business right now. Thrilled to see him back. The match also went, they lost. Chase Owens is always there to take a pin. Chase Owens is, whenever he's in a match, he's there to take a pin. So, the Bullet Club team lost, but after the match, you had Hikuleo run in to beat up Flip Gordon and Brody King. Now, Hikuleo, in case you don't know, is the brother of Tama Tonga and Tongaloa, and he's a tall young man. And if he's coming into, and Jay White was laughing, of course, he's letting us understand that he had orchestrated this whole thing. So if Jay White is indeed orchestrating it all, that's fantastic. And if Hikuleo is going to be like this heat, his new heat, at least in North America, that's fantastic. Because right now, there's still no travel. And I think they're clearly establishing, you know, the New Japan Pro Wrestling of America guys versus the guys over in Japan. And I think that's cool. I think it's a good idea if these people are available to work, do something with them, help establish the US brand at the same time. And maybe they'll be able to open up and have some shows as well. We don't know. We'll see how things go right now. Everything is going very, very well for New Japan. I mean, I don't think they're in any rush to do live shows or go on tour. Things are going well. I love the Friday night shows. The Friday night shows are so great. Just 1 hour, easily consumable wrestling. Fantastic stuff. More Cool Beans. We had the qualifiers for the King of Pro Wrestling tournament, I guess you'd call it. The event, 8 wrestlers. Still in New Japan, let's refresh our memories. What is the King of Pro Wrestling thing? It's something new that they're adding to the New Japan mix this year over in Japan. There are 8 wrestlers who are taking part of it, and there are qualifier matches. There are qualifier matches to become the King of Pro Wrestling. Each wrestler came to the match because the matches are done. They came to the match with their own rules, stipulations, and fans voted on what rules would be used in these first round elimination matchups. The winners of the 4 singles title matches would have a 4-way match on Summer Struggle this weekend on the August 29th, which is unusual in New Japan, to be perfectly honest. You don't see that very often, but that's what's going to happen. And the winner of that 4-way will be the King of Pro Wrestling 2020. It's a new title that they that they're setting up, and that title must be defended in stipulation matches for the rest of the year. And once 2020 comes to an end, the title is reset. It's vacated automatically, and then we start the tournament over again. I think it's a new concept that has a lot of potential. I was worried about the gimmick matches a little bit, and I'm going to tell you guys, I'm still a little worried about the gimmick matches. It's not gimmick matches in New Japan aren't par for the course. We don't see them even a quarter of as often as we see them in WWE. But here's what we had. We had Satoshi Kojima versus El Desperado. It was Desperado's stipulation that was picked by the audience, which was no finishers allowed. You couldn't use your finisher to end the match. But Kojima is a big, stupid wrestler and used his finisher. So Despy won by disqualification. And I'm okay with that because Despy is a good junior and I like him. And I hope they do good things with him this year. Kojima, and I don't know why they felt they had to protect Satoshi Kojima, but this was a pretty good match. Then we had Toru Yano, my spirit animal, versus Bushi. It was Yano's stipulation that was picked. And I thought it was really cool. It was two count pinfalls. So instead of going to three, you only needed a two count to win the match. It was a comedy match. It was Yano. Bushi played along. Match came to an end when Bushi taped, because Yano always comes with tape and he tries to use the tape, but Bushi used the tape on Yano to tape up his ankles together, his feet. So Yano was basically just like jumping around and was able to reverse a roll up on Bushi to get the pin. So Yano moves forward. Then we had Sonata versus Sho, which was a submissions only match. That was a fun one. It was good. And I think this is a stipulation that works really well in New Japan. Sonata came out on top of that one. And then Kazuchika Okada had his stipulation picked in his match against Yujiro Takahashi, the Tokyo Pimp. He decided his stipulation was a 1-3 handicap match. And who were the two others who came to the ring with Yujiro Takahashi? The Tokyo Pimp was Jado and Gato, for fuck's sake. And the match was a mess. I didn't like it. And it was the main event and it went on too long and I didn't like it. This is why I'm a little worried with the stipulations moving forward, because I don't think New Japan does stipulations well. Stick to what you know best, and that is creating compelling and believable sports-like matches. That's what they're good at. So we'll see how things go moving forward with this, but it was a very uneven elimination round, essentially. So I still can't understand why Okada is still messing around with the Tokyo Pimp, because Yujiro just brings everyone down. It was not a good match. I don't know why they're having Jado wrestle. It just breaks my heart when I see that. It wasn't great. It honestly wasn't great. Anyway, that being said, we have our finals that are going to take place this weekend. In fact, the Summer Struggle card has been set up, which is it's a pretty solid card. We have the IWGP champion and Intercontinental champion Evil, who's going to defend both of his titles against Tetsuya Naito. I think Evil is going to retain. We have IWGP tag team champions Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi. I think this one can go either way. My mind is not made up yet on that one. IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion Hiromu Takahashi will be defending it against Taiji Ishimori, which should be a blast. The match that I think everyone is most excited for, Never Openweight Champion Shingo Tagaki defending against Minoru Suzuki. I won't need much coffee to stay awake during that one, by God. And then we're going to have the King of Pro Wrestling Tournament Finals, Kazuchika Okada versus Sonata versus Toru Yano versus El Desperado. And finally, we're also having Master Wato, the Blue Streak of Goodness, versus Kanemaru. Whatever, but that's okay. So there you have it. That's what's going to be happening. So be sure, if you're watching New Japan, 7 a.m., if you want to come join me live, 7:30 a.m., once the show's done, come join me and Mags. It'll be a good time. Nick Wolf left us a super chat. Thank you, Nick. Says, King of Pro Wrestling is the Keep Okada Away from Evil gimmick. Yeah? Yeah? Although I don't think he's going to win, though. I think this is a perfect for Sonata. I think it's perfect, perfect stuff for Sonata. I don't think Okada's going to win this, but that's just me. Kristen Ashley left us a super chat. Thank you, Kristen. She says, this is so you never feel the need to do that. Oh, sorry. What? I'm sorry. I don't know. This was linked up with something I said previously. I'm sorry. I don't know what I said. Nick Wolf. To do the Tokyo Pimp thing. Okay. Nick Wolf says, please make the Tokyo Pimp scream a fixture on the broadcasts. I'm leaning into it. I'm leaning into it. Might do some stuff on Discord. A couple of triggers. We'll see what happens. Okay, so we are going to move into the... thank you, everyone, for the super chats. We're going to move into WWE now. We're going to move into WWE. We're going to start talking about that. And there's some stuff, right? I'm going to start with some warm soda. I want to talk about the Thunderdome. I shared a few thoughts on the Patreon for the members earlier this week. Because I was in the Thunderdome, and so was the First Lady of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, Kristen Ashley, on Sunday for SummerSlam. We were there on different... at different times, and I gave my full experience here, but this is basically how it goes. The Thunderdome thing, just to be clear, is free, right? You don't have to pay for it. You just have to wait till WWE opens up, until WWE opens up some the signups. There you go, and you just have to be quick on the draw to secure your place. Then when you get there, when you get your link, and it's when you hit the link to join the Thunderdome at the time, at the appropriate time that WWE told you to join, then that becomes a lottery in and about itself. They overbook it. They clearly overbook it. And you have to, I had to refresh, and so did Kristen, about 20, 25 times before we could actually get in, because they kept saying, no, it's full. No, it's full. But we kept refreshing, and eventually we got in. So if you're thinking about doing Thunderdome, don't shut down your browser in frustration if you log yourself in and it says, oh, the Thunderdome is full. Keep refreshing until a place shows up. So basically what Thunderdome is on when you're there, on the participant side, you end up watching the event with you in the little corner here of your screen. And so that you see what you look like, and you're watching the video on a stream quality that's not really much better than a pirated stream. It's not, it's super clunky, it's laggy, it's mega pixelated. That's essentially the experience. Then sure, on top of that, you have the queues. This is something that everyone's been talking about this week, right? Certain Twitter accounts, members of the wrestling media took WWE to task on this, or people excused it. But you do have people who are like, because I was there for the first for the post show and the first match, which was Asuka versus Bayley, and you have a guy come in and he starts to psych you up and he's like, hey, okay, WWE Universe, the show's about to start in a couple of minutes, let's get that energy going. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, oh, here comes Bayley, let's see those thumbs down for Bayley. So yes, they are guiding you to do to react the way they want you to react. Now, do you have to do it? That's entirely up to you. I know Kristen did. They were asking Kristen to thumbs down Sasha. You'd never see Kristen Ashley thumbs down Sasha Banks. Trust me, she didn't do it, and she was there for longer than I was. I'm just saying. So the thing here is that, so is it that big a problem? Not really. I've worked in television elsewhere, and you have warm-up guys. You have people who talk to the audience, get the audience pumped, and give some cues, and will come out, like, let's say before a talk show, and it's like, hey, such and such guest is going to come out. We really want you to give him a big, rousing ovation, so do it. So I wasn't put off by it all that much. And I understand why they're doing it, because it's hard to translate energy through screens into a wrestling program. That's hard enough as it is. But to get people to get excited from their couches is even harder. So I understand why they do it. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? It doesn't matter. It really, really, honestly does not matter. Like, this is a tidbit that a lot of people are hooking on. But this is my analysis of the situation. This is probably what WWE has been wanting for years. I mean, they've created the perfectly controlled environment. This is like a biodome of wrestling where everything is perfectly controlled. Everything is everything feels really artificial. You have people on screens, artificial heat being pumped in, artificial crowd murmurs, and then asking the audience to react. I mean, it's a WWE production. What are you expecting? This is exactly what it is. So ultimately, from my point of view, would I do Thunderdome again? Would I sign up for Payback or Monday Night Raw? No, I would not do it again. Not because it was bad, it's because it was bland. It's just really a bland, boring experience. It's not egregious. It's not terrible, but it felt like work at some point because they have these expectations. You have to sit down. You can't eat food. They don't want you to drink. You have to wear certain things. I'm like, you know, why am I doing it? Because there's no retroaction. There's nothing coming back to you as a participant. Maybe, you know, if you really want to take the chance to see your face on TV, then go for it. But it's a very, very bland, boring experience. I was talking about it earlier this week. If they had like a chat room, that would already be a little more interesting, right? Or if they had ways for talent to interact with us, maybe because they had Kevin Owens come in at some point to sort of get us excited. What if there was more of that? What if you had just a little Q&A session through a chat or something like that? There's ways for them to make it more interesting, but it's dull as drywall is what it is. And I'm watching the WWE pay-per-view on a shitty stream quality. Meanwhile, I'm paying $10 a month for the WWE Network, $13 a month here in Canada, to watch the pay-per-view full quality. Why am I doing the Thunderdome? I understand why WWE wants to do the Thunderdome, but from a fan's point of view, now that I've done it, I don't see the value. Unless, like I said, unless you want to see your face on TV, which is fair, which is absolutely fair. And then, of course, we saw all the stuff, the nonsense that happened, the trolls that decided to go in here, to go on the Thunderdome, and, you know, the Chris Benoit stuff, and the Ku Klux Klan and the beheading, and these aren't wrestling fans, right? Not even the Chris Benoit stuff. These aren't wrestling fans. These are trolls. These are professional trolls. They come from message boards. They see these opportunities and they jump on it. So, you know, I saw a lot of people saying, wrestling fans are the worst. I promise you, these are not wrestling fans who are doing these things. These are trolls hanging out in certain message boards on the internet who see these openings to come spoil the party or piss in the pudding. Is that an expression? If not, it should be. I just made it up. So ultimately, WWE needs to police this thing more. And I saw people saying, well, maybe if you paid money to get in. But I wouldn't pay. If I had paid for Thunderdome, I would have been angry. Because, like I said, it is a dull as dirt experience, ultimate for the fan. It's not fun. It's not something where you're like, this was really cool. So to go out and leave out and you're like, meh. And they kick you out really unceremoniously when it's time to cycle through the next set of fans, by the way. So they need to police better. I think people should create accounts before going in. I think they need more staff policing it. Making sure that this nonsense doesn't happen. Maybe put on a little more latency. I know they want to get the spontaneous reaction, so the latency is very, very low, and that's a good thing. That's like 1.5 to 2 seconds latency, which is nothing. But it's not immediate, but it's very, very close. Maybe they need to up the latency so that they can block nonsense before it hits the air. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that they could be doing better anyway on that end. I want to say hello to Daniel Marshall, who left us a super chat. Says, hey, Warren, take my lucky Irish money. Hey, top of the morning to you. Thank you very much, Daniel. And I'm part Irish, and I should not be doing that. Anakin JMT left us another super chat. Thank you, Anakin. Says WWE overbooking something. Shocked face. I know, right? Want to say hello to Devil Kazuya. Good to see ya. See what I did there? That's pretty funny, right? Yeah, there you go. I want to make sure I didn't miss anyone. All right. So that was some warm soda. Let's keep some warm soda going. I'm going to talk about, Takeover 30. I thought it was a fine show. It was okay. There was a lot less excitement though that Takeovers once had. And I think that was my main problem here. For a while, there's a lot of us who've been talking about, NXT doesn't feel like NXT anymore. It's not quite the same. And I got to tell you, I agree. This is not the Takeovers that got me excited a couple of years ago. I don't know. There's a lot of spark that's missing. And I think in one part, it has a lot to do with the booking. And it has a lot to do with the call-ups to main roster that are happening spontaneously. I feel like Triple H and Creative down there are regrouping. They're trying to build something, and there's rugs that are being pulled from under certain people's feet. Velveteen Dream is digging his own hole. I mean, and you know Dream was part of big plans for NXT. You know he was. I'm not trying to excuse anything. I'm not trying to say keep Velveteen on. You just know that that's part of the reasons why they're scrambling to find more stuff to do. We had Balor versus Thatcher, which was a good match. I mean, Finn Balor has been consistently good in all these inconsequential matches that he's been on. He's been so good in all of them. And Thatcher was good as well, but there was nothing special to it. Balor wins again. And I think that I would have been curious to see what his booking would have been like had Karrion Kross held on to the title and didn't have to relinquish. Match of the night was the ladder match. That's not even up for argument. It was fantastic. It was wild. It built really, really well. I liked Candice LeRae getting involved on Johnny Gargano's behalf. Straight up costing Cameron Grimes the win. They had me going. I was sure the hat was going to pull it off, but no, they didn't. And that was a shame. Love the spot where she was on the back of Bronson Reed, on the ladder. And then Bronson did the big splash off the ladder with Candice on his shoulders. That was great. Reed also tossed Velveteen Dream off the top of the ladder, catapulting him like right into commentary, or at least on the other side of the barricades through tables. Production didn't pick it up at all, which sucks. But then again, it's Velveteen Dream, so it's fine. And the final moment when Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano were at the top fighting for the title was really well done. Johnny unhooked the title, but Priest grabbed it from the top and Gargano wouldn't let go. It was a clever moment. Damian realizing that even though Johnny unhooked the strap, he still had time to grab it. I like that. No one looked stupid on that spot. I liked it. This was a wild, wild one. And without a question, match of the night. Close second, though, Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee. This was real good, folks. This was real good. And you know what? Here's the thing. Crossover stars getting into wrestling, we've seen it often. We've seen that Bachelorette chick on Monday nights. That happens all the time. And most of the time, it's a groaner, right? But this here, what Pat McAfee did, he showed that he appreciates wrestling. He didn't get into it for the ha-has. He didn't get into it because he thought it'd be a cool thing to do. He got into it because I think he sincerely likes it, and he was good at it. Whoever trained him, kudos. This was good. And I think this will be remembered as one of the best crossover press, mainstream, whatever you want to call them, stars that got into wrestling. This will be considered one of the best, like Stephen Amell a few years ago as well. So there you go. And in my show notes here, our boy Ben, if you're a Patreon, you can add some comments in my show notes, and Ben took the opportunity to do it here. And he says, in one match, Pat did better wrestling and promo work than Goldberg in his entire career. He has more than three moves in his arsenal and looks like a safe worker. There you go. I agree, but you know, it's not as It's not as if I'm completely unbiased when it comes to Goldberg stuff. Io Shirai versus Dakota Kai was good. A little underwhelming, if you ask me. Interesting post-match with Raquel and Rhea Ripley. That we saw what how that turned out on last night on NXT. With Raquel actually getting a pinfall win for her team on Rhea Ripley. The Mercedes Martinez feud barrels on. Ben again in the show notes here said that it looks like they're trying to build heat up for Rhea again to be the number one contender because Io has little convincing competition, and I agree. So I think they're taking the long road with Rhea. I think a feud with Mercedes Martinez is a fantastic way to go about it. I kind of feel they're going to build Raquel up and feed her to Io, you know, being able to take out a big tough lady before moving on to the big tough lady. It makes sense to me. I think it's good. And then, of course, the main event, Keith Lee versus Karrion Kross. Before we saw everything that happened, or at least before we found out what happened during the match, I was like, man, what are we watching, right? Because the match was dull. I know for a lot of people, if within 5 minutes of the beginning of a match, there isn't like they're not running a gauntlet of suplexes or flips to the floor or brawling into the audience. If you don't have that within 5 minutes, people are saying, "Oh, this is a boring match." I'm okay, and I actually enjoy a slow burn. You know, especially when you know you're going long, pace yourself, take your time, build for the dramatic conclusion. That's what it's for. But I'm going to tell you, I was like, man, when are we going to get out of the first half of the match here? Because it was so plodding and slow. I did not understand what was going on. But then we found out that about halfway in the match, I asked people out on Twitter, you know, what do we know when Karrion Kross was injured? And the consensus seems to be when about mid-match, he takes a clothesline and he doesn't bump well on it. And he separates his shoulder. There's actually a report going around that the injury might be a little more severe than a separated shoulder, because a separated shoulder without the need for surgery can be like an injury that can be healed between 4 to 12 weeks. I'm thinking 4 to 12 weeks, there's no reason for him really to relinquish the title, but apparently it's probably a little more serious than that. I was shocked that they decided to go to pull the plug on Keith Lee so soon after winning the dual belts, then dropping the North American title, and then onto this. I was like, what are they doing? I don't understand. Of course, we got the answer at SummerSlam when they said Keith Lee's debuting on Raw. Trust me, we're getting to that. But as it stands, it was not great. It was not great. And I don't understand why they decided to go down this road with Keith Lee. It felt such a throwaway thing. It really, really felt like such a throwaway thing. And the problem that I have, the ultimate problem that I have here, is this is, it's a very old, it's funny to say, but it's an old school way of seeing NXT. When NXT was on the network and was strictly a developmental brand for WWE, the main roster shows, it was normal for them at some point to just go in and pick out all the top baby faces and the top heels there and bring them up, because that's how it goes. That you were training in NXT to learn the WWE style so that you could go up on main roster and have a good career, be main roster ready, right? And the difference that has occurred that has occurred since then is now NXT is a brand in and about itself on a national cable television station and has to compete with or against another wrestling show on Wednesday nights. So whereas at some point We all like, oh, so-and-so is going to get his call-up. So-and-so is going to get his call-up. How is NXT expected to compete and build compelling stars, characters, wrestlers that you're going to want to tune into every Wednesday to see if at any given moment Vince can say, by God, pal, I want the big boy. Bring him up here. The limitless guy. Yeah, I want him up here. And then it's like, well, everything we have planned, boys, all the work we've been doing to get Keith Lee at the top of the hill here and maybe be a draw for us, whoop, we got to start from scratch. And at some point, you have to, that's something that main roster has to stop doing. It just has to stop doing it. Because NXT is in a time slot, there's money being made here. There's money being paid out. This is something that just can't, they can't plunder NXT like they used to anymore. They just can't. I mean, within what, 2 months, Riddle and Keith Lee, two potentially huge stars for NXT. Whoop. I don't get it. I mean, good for them. They go up to main roster, they make more money. I mean, good for them. Ultimately, I'm sure that's their target. It's so weird. Like, it really is weird. Anakin left us a super chat. Thank you, Anakin. He says, that's why I feel NXT will ultimately lose against AEW. AEW can build and keep their stars while NXT has to build them for main roster. You'd think that would be that they no longer think like that, right? Where it'd be like, well, if we're competing, or maybe WWE, billion-dollar company, just doesn't give a shit and just wants to put their programming there because it'll keep some people from going over to AEW and they just don't care. Maybe that's it too. We don't know. But it's weird to not care when you're putting in millions and millions of dollars into the production of the show on a cable network. I don't think that's what it is. But you'd think, I agree with Anakin, you'd think that NXT would continue to build them, would stop building for main roster and build for itself. I don't know. Next. Let's get some cool beans going here for WWE. Let's talk about SummerSlam. SummerSlam was good. SummerSlam was a good, good show. There was the main event, but everything else was very good to great. No, I'd say good to great. Very good. Good to great. Apollo Crews defeated MVP for the WWE United States Champion. Chip retained it, actually. That happened on the pre-show. It's fine. Let's move Apollo Crews away from MVP, though. I think we're going towards Bobby Lashley, and I'm fine with that. Bayley defeated Asuka. Asuka, that was the first of her two matches for the evening. This was a good match. I loved the spots where they were pulling themselves out of the air into submission moves. I think Bayley got Asuka into a knee bar, and Asuka did the same thing a little later with an arm bar, though. Clearly, you know, it was a good match, but it wasn't the match. Clearly, they didn't want to expend Asuka for the big match later on, which is fine. Sasha's interference, you know, I was like, why are we getting a screwy finish again? Why can't it just be the women doing it? Well, we got the answer later on, but my God, I'm telling you, WWE right now is, with the amount of screwy finishes that they're doing over and over and over again, it's really starting to feel like the Attitude Era, and in the parts of the Attitude Era that people don't remember because they pushed it out of their mind. Because there were a lot of screw job non-finishes, and it's really getting to me now. The Street Profits defeated Andrade and Angel Garza to retain their Raw Tag Team Championships. Also, fine match. Tez's spinning frog splash is now a highlight, right? It's a highlight. I don't know how he pulls that off, but he does it, and it's cool. Mandy Rose defeated Sonya Deville in a no disqualification loser leaves WWE match. You know what was good with this? It felt like a grudge match. The way it started, the way they ran in, they started wailing on each other. It felt aggressive. They looked angry. And how many angry feuds have you seen where the two guys start in the ring and they look at each other and they go for knuckle locks and tie-ups? There was nothing of this. And I liked it because it felt like they really hated each other, felt like they had to run in and destroy each other. I liked it. It was okay, but it was too short. It sucks that Sonya has to leave, but I understand it, and it's defensible. But Jesus, it had to take something like that, because she was to keep her from getting the push that she, I'm going to use the word, deserved at this point, because she's been doing fantastic work. But I hope that I can't blame her from wanting some time off. I think her lawyer said that she has to take some time off. Look, regardless of whether the lawyer or not said it, that shit, and I don't know if you guys saw the footage that was released to the media, and that footage of the guy just like walking purposefully towards her, it's bone-chilling Hollywood shit that happened to her in real life. That's trauma, man. That's something that is going to stay with her. Fuck that guy. Fuck anyone else. But fuck anyone else who stalks and acts that way towards not just wrestlers, any type of public personality. I understand the guy is probably not well and that he's going to require help, but still, fuck that guy. Anakin JMT left us a super chat saying, kudos to WWE for two SummerSlams in a row with a women's match, not for a title. Not they can do it on more pay-per-views. Sure. And they're building towards that. Absolutely. And they're giving themselves opportunity. Thank you for the super chat, Anakin. Because look at what they're doing on Raw. Even though the matches are short, and maybe even if the matches aren't great either, they have the Riot Squad in a feud with the Iconics. Has nothing to do with titles. They have Natalya and Lana in a feud with Mickey James. They're doing that. So we're probably going to have the opportunity. We're probably going to see a little more of this as we move forward. Bianca Belair is also involved in that. And that's cool. I that's something that we all felt for years that should be happening. Doesn't always have to be about the titles. This is good stuff. We're going the right way. Seth Rollins defeated Dominic Mysterio in a street fight. This match ruled. It was a story. It was drama. And here's the thing. A couple of weeks ago, or maybe, yeah, at this point, I think it's a couple of weeks ago, Seth Rollins tweeted out something to the effect that people don't like long-term storytelling. Well, people do like long-term storytelling, Seth, because this match would not have been as good if would not have been as interesting or as good as it was had it not been for the long-term story here. Sure, the eyeball nonsense made us all groan, but if you stick to telling wrestling stories with wrestlers, as opposed to all this, I'll poke your eye out, I'm gonna puke and all that shit, if you stick to that, to the fundamentals of storytelling in wrestling, you create something really compelling and something that we got behind during this match. And it's Dominic who brought us, who made us believe that this match could work. We were all skeptical. Sure, he could take a couple of kendo stick shots like a pro. Good for him. But we didn't know how good he could work. He works real well. Green around the edges a little bit, but we've seen greener people be on WWE television than him. The feud honestly should have ended on Sunday. It was an excellent payoff. The villain wins. It sucks. It really should have ended there, but it looks like they're so. But I would have ended it. I thought that match ruled. Match of the night, though. Asuka defeating Sasha Banks to win the Raw Tag Team Championship. Women's Championship. Such an incredibly strong match. Of course, we've all talked about the sunset powerbomb to the floor that Sasha did on Asuka, and Asuka's head bounced in ways that we don't want to see heads bounce. It was hard-hitting. It was brutal. It was top-level talent doing top-level talent shit. It's one of the best matches in WWE of the year. The story of Bayley not interfering in the match is fantastic. We're inching ever so closer. ever so closer to the split, and it was also good for the match because it helped, because the story here of Bayley not interfering helped us get a clean fucking win, and that is what is most amazing. Sasha Banks is cursed when it comes to singles titles. I think it is a long-term story that you should maintain, that Sasha can't keep a belt for more than a month. I think it's fantastic that she loses it on her first defense, whatever. I love it. And I love Sasha Banks. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't want Sasha to hold titles. I think this is a fun story to tell, because the moment that she does hold a title for like a year or 6 months, people are going to start freaking out. I think this was such a good, strong, well-done match. And anyone who had forgotten how good Sasha Banks was reminded there. Again, Sasha's been doing fantastic work this year. And it's crazy when you think that this was on the anniversary of TakeOver Brooklyn, right? Of Sasha and Bayley, the 5-year anniversary, or at least it was the day after, right? And Sasha shows us once again just how fantastic she is. It was good, good stuff. Drew McIntyre defeated Randy Orton. I liked it. It's one of these divisive matches where people are like, it was too slow. I like slow burn matches. This was a good pro wrestling match. They didn't go all out on it, though. I felt that it never really reached that next level, but clearly they're setting up a rematch. I didn't care for the ending. I understand the, oh, look, a backslide out of nowhere. Sort of like you're RKO, but I did a backslide. I get it. It's tit for tat kind of shit. And it's like, oh, I can beat you like that too, Randy. But it was still dumb. I didn't care for the, I didn't like the end. It was anticlimactic. And when I saw the ending, I was like, oh, that's why they're not ending the show with this. But there's another reason why they didn't end the show with this. But a fine match. Don't get me wrong, but clearly they pulled back on the reins for a bigger payoff down the road. And then The Fiend became Universal Champion again, defeating Braun Strowman. Where was Alexa? Why wasn't she there? That was weird. The match blew. That was a bad match. It was that, folks. Contrary to what we remember of Hell in the Cell, we remember the stomps and the shit outside the ring. We remember all of that. But this was a bad match. The finish sucked. It was done really fast. And you know what? But then when it dawns on you and you go, oh, this is why they did it. This is why they didn't spend too much time on it. Well, it was because Roman Reigns returned, right? Roman Reigns made his big comeback, ran in, beat up Braun, beat up The Fiend. So that's ultimately the big takeaway here. And I think WWE needs Roman Reigns more than ever at this point. I think I really do believe that they need this caliber type of guy to be present in this era. I think he's been missed. I think they've been aimless without that. There's an anchor that has been missing, and it's this guy here. He runs in, you know, he says, you're just a freak in a mask. I run this bitch. I think a lot of people think it's going to be a heel turn. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be a heel turn. Just because he comes in and he's angry and he says mean things. He said mean things to The Undertaker when he, well, not mean things, but like, you know, he said that he retired him and stuff like that. And, you know, but as Ben pointed out again in the show notes, thank you again, Ben. He says, this is the perfect opportunity to separate Roman from his Shield image. He needs to lose the tactical vest, new entrance theme, no more big dog, like a Samoan badass. And I agree. And you know, this is my prediction, folks. I wasn't here last week to talk about it, but it's been rumbling in the back of my mind. And I'm talking about it today, and I put it out there on Twitter. I think Roman Reigns is the leader of Retribution. We saw an angry Roman Reigns who clearly wants to take back what's his, the Universal title. You know, I run this bitch. He didn't say this is my yard. there's some little more disrespect here. It's like, this is my place. Now, what if he comes back with an army of hungry youngsters who want to shake things up and want to make their own a name for themselves? What if they're all under Roman Reigns? That would be the best payoff for Retribution. Because as it stands right now, Retribution, if you put wrestlers in masks, you're creating the expectation that whoever is behind the mask is going to surprise and entice us, right? Otherwise, just have them run in maskless. But I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of rumors floating around. I'm sure a lot of you maybe have seen the prognostications, the images. There's a lot of people saying, well, one of the women is Caden Carter. I love Caden Carter. I think she's a fine wrestler. But when she unmasks, everyone is going to go, what the fuck? And we're going to have a large majority of more casual WWE wrestlers are going to be like, who is she? But if you have one, if you have Dio Madden be revealed as one of them, like, who? Wait, wasn't that guy who was on commentary and got punked out by, he took an F5 from Brock Lesnar and he never came back? There's no shock value. There's no surprise. But if you have Roman Reigns unmask, now you're cooking with gas. Now you've got something that you're like, ooh, now we've got something that we can go with. Because otherwise, if Dominik Dijakovic, bless his heart, love the guy, if he ends up being the leader and they go into Survivor Series and have a Survivor Series match, Revolution's going to get their asses whooped. It's not going to be good. Anakin left us a super chat. Thank you, Anakin. He says, top tier pun Warren, pulling back on the reins for the main event. Thank you for clearly picking up that very intentional pun that I made. Very super 100% intentional. But remember, folks, you can still leave super chats. We've still got more to talk about. My God, we've got more to talk about. I'll take the time to read your stuff on the air. Want to say hello to our pal Fowl, who's in the chat. Good to see you, Fowly. What are you doing up so late? Raw sucked this week. And here's the wild thing. We witnessed within 24 hours all the goodwill that WWE had built with SummerSlam completely evaporate within 3 hours the next day, the very next day, 24 hours later on Raw, just like poof. That was not a good show. Keith Lee's debut had us all scratching our heads. The music, you know why the music, right? Because CFOs who used to compose the music for WWE, they're distributors, not CFOs, but the music distributor who represents CFOs is like apparently requesting an ungodly like 50% cut or something like that. That's what the reports are saying. Don't quote me as fact here. That's what I've read. But they're requesting a huge cut on music rights, which 50% is insane. But then again, a $1 billion company like WWE, I respect the attempt to try and get as much money off of it as you can. But apparently WWE has been going around and telling talent, hey, you know what? You should dump your CFO's theme and go with one of these new ones. So that's what happened with Keith Lee here. The gear's weird, but he's not buried, folks. And I can't stress this enough. We've talked about it before on the show. What does it mean to be buried in wrestling? Buried in wrestling doesn't mean you're going on TV. Buried in wrestling doesn't mean that your first match on a pay-per-view is going to be against Randy Orton. He's in a program with Randy Orton coming in at a pay-per-view. And if you don't understand what that symbolism means in WWE speak, well, you need to go back and look at wrestlers they really didn't care for and see what they did with them. But clearly they see something big for him to put him with Orton, who is currently one of the company's biggest stars. He is a legend, I think, and I think he's seen even bigger within the company than what we perceive him to be. And he's their top heel. He's their top heel right now. No, it's not Baron Corbin. It is Randy Orton, who is doing the best work of his entire career right now. So, he's not buried. Cut that shit out, folks. And Keith Liam said, he said on Twitter, relax, it'll be okay. I agree. It was a very janky debut, but he's not dead. But there was so much garbage on the show. And you saw the reports. Vince McMahon tearing up the script a half hour before going live and still writing the script as the show was going along. That's nonsense. That's absolute trash. And I'm going to tell you, sometimes I'm like, the buried argument is a good example. Because I will always say, with the amount of money that WWE pumps into these shows and the money that they're getting, the cost of a quarter hour of Raw or SmackDown is so expensive. I keep telling you guys, why would they bother to put someone that they don't like on TV and spend their money on this person? Why would they do that? It doesn't make sense. But then Vince goes and pulls this off on his $1 million show. A half hour before it goes live, he decides to tear up the script, start over, and continue writing the show as it's going along. That's not professional. That, I'm sorry, that is not a professional context within which you work. There's not a television show on earth, there's not a live show on earth who'd go with that. Can you imagine going into Saturday Night Live and the writers are still in the room at a half hour before showtime, still coming up with scripts and writing scripts as you go along? Sure, there's adjustments. There's adjustments. We're changing this joke, or those things happen. Or hey, your cue is going to be here instead of over there. We're scrapping this segment. That's part of for the course. But rewriting? Nah, man. What is your staff for? What is the writer's room for? There's no need for writers in WWE. It just blows my mind. It really does. It really, really does. There was so much junk on this show. The Demi Burnett stuff is shit. It's just shit. Just get it off my TV. This is exactly why the Pat McAfee stuff worked and this doesn't. And when we see people like Pat McAfee pop up, we get defensive. We're like, this is gonna suck, because then we see the Demi Burnett stuff and I weep for War Machine. I weep for War Machine. We got some fucking arm wrestling. There's nothing I love more on my competitive wrestling show to see people compete in other things than wrestling, right? I love that. I adore that. The lumberjack match sucked. None of the lumberjills tossed anyone back into the ring. Raw Underground is now very well lit. Have you noticed? No more little smoke machines, no more atmosphere dim lights. No, we're like on neon lights. That's so cool, right? My God. Randy Orton misses two punts. He whiffs his punts. And Drew still goes to hospital. There was more retribution nonsense. I really thought that they should have revealed at SummerSlam. They have to reveal at Payback. This angle is not working. It's just not working. At least Bianca Belair was on TV and scored a win. But this was an objectively bad Raw. It was an objectively bad episode of Raw, and it's Vince McMahon's fault, not the fans' fault. Despite the fact that they have that wrestlers have been attacking fans, right? The fans never being happy. Oh, we're in the complaining era now. And it's weird. It's weird that you had Angel Garza tweet that out on just hours after WWE did SummerSlam. Angel Garza tweets out about fans complaining after arguably their best pay-per-view of the year, and that was the best received pay-per-view by fans and critics alike. And they're like, well, the fans always complain. It's the fans' fault, right? And don't kid yourselves on one thing. If suddenly you're seeing, look, we have this wrestler complaining about fans. We have this wrestler complaining about fans. This wrestler complaining about fans. Trust me, this is coordinated with WWE PR. They would not be doing this if it wasn't a concerted effort by WWE PR to do this. Probably sent some blast out to some wrestlers saying, look, if you guys are tired of the complaining, go ahead. That kind of stuff doesn't happen by accident. It really doesn't. Not in WWE. Can we talk about AEW a bit now? Whew, let's do it. Let's do it. I feel like I'm running a marathon, but it's fantastic stuff. Okay. AEW, let's start with the big news from Saturday. Brody Lee is the new TNT champion. Again, I gave a rather extended thoughts, my rather extended thoughts on Brody Lee winning on the Patreon. If you want to check that out and show your support, patreon.com/MrWarrenHayes. It was a clean, brutal, perfect squash. The post-match angle, perfect, perfect, perfect. There was chaos and brutal, and this it couldn't have been better. Even Arn bumped. Arn Anderson bumped. That's how good it was. Brody Lee needed this. He needed this ever since he got into AEW. Losing to Moxley, sure, he looked strong in defeat, and it was a really good match they had at Revolution. But here, was it at Revolution or at Double or Nothing? Was it Double or Nothing? Right? I think so. Yeah. I could be wrong. That being said, he really needed this to look very, very strong, and it worked. But it probably would not have been as effective if Cody had not won the TNT title from the get-go, and if he hadn't had the run that he had with it, the workhorse run. This was really, really well set up. It's exactly what we talked about when we were talking about who should win the TNT title to begin with. I argued Cody should win because he's a top guy, perceived as a main event talent. He should be the guy to bring prestige straight off the bat with the title. And that's what they did. That's exactly what they did. And the fact that it took so long for someone to beat him to get to that, it just added everything on top of Brody Lee's monstrous victory. It cements the rehabilitation of the Dark Order that has been going on for months now after the stuff with the putties at first and the throne didn't work out. Now they rehabilitated it. It's a good gimmick. People are into it now. Even tonight on Dynamite, their segment was fun. And here's what we have in AEW, folks, with Brody Lee now. We have a supervillain. We have a mastermind who is a force of nature and has an army at his disposal. This is fantastic stuff. I could not have been more happy with the outcome. It was exciting, got us talking, got us interested. Man, I love it. I absolutely love it. Let's hang on to some more cool beans here. Ivelisse and Diamante win the AEW Women's World Cup Tournament, the Deadly Draw, as they call it. This was a solid match, folks. Ivelisse, no question in my mind, was the MVP of the match. Ali took most of the offense, and she sold fantastically. I think this was Ali's best outing in AEW since she signed. Diamante walloped Ali at some point with a stunner, and then Ivelisse closed it out with a snapmare takeover and into a kick to the face, which was really cool. I love how Ivelisse and Diamante were handed the roses and they were like, no, fuck this shit, and they pulled out their flags instead. Now AEW, lock these women down, lock them down, sign them to contracts post haste, lock down Ty Conti, and I think that's what we got tonight, right, with the Dark Order thing. Fingers crossed, but I think that's what we've got. Lock down Nicole Savoy. Push Anna Jay. My God. I would dare say that the tournament was a success in the sense that it built to two new stars, two new fresh faces who can work well. And who have the potential to be important players in the women's division because they're talented, because they're good. So it felt like a reset. It felt like a reinvigoration. Ultimately, let's discover these new women like we saw tonight on Dynamite with Ty Conti joining the Dark Order possibly as well. this was good as an outcome. Now they need to capitalize on it. I'm going to tell you, I thought it was really strange that neither Ivelisse nor Diamante were on the show tonight on Dynamite. I'm like, you don't need to cool them down right now, right? You don't need to give them some time off. Push them. They're the winners. It just happened a few days ago. Do it. You know? Crossing my fingers. Crossing my fingers. And since we're on the topic of women, let's talk about Thunder Rosa, who has been revealed to be Hikaru Shida's opponent at All Out. Now, does this hurt the NWA? Because I heard a lot of people saying, oh, it's going to hurt the NWA because their women's champion is going to go on AEW and there's no way she's going to win. Well, does it expose the AEW's women division? Oh, well, they can't get some talent good enough to face Shida on their biggest pay-per-view. They have to go out. True. Yeah. Here's what I think. As far as the NWA goes, nah, it doesn't harm them in any way. Absolutely not in any way. The NWA is effectively doing nothing since COVID kicked in, since Dave Lagana was revealed to be a creep. They've been on standby, on hold. They've been bleeding talent. People have been going every other way. Are you kidding me? You're on AEW, which is arguably the hottest property in wrestling right now, and you're sending your women's champion on there. It's like the NWA, National Wrestling Alliance. Oh, shit, that's still around? Yeah, it's still around. You're keeping the name alive and you're putting it right in front of wrestling fans. Are you kidding me? This does not hurt the NWA whatsoever if Thunder Rosa loses, which she probably will. But if she loses, it will not hurt her in any way. But yes, it does expose the AEW women's division completely. Because arguably the only real match they could go back to, for Shida, where you know something great would come out of it, is Nyla Rose. But that just happened. You can't go to that well too often. So yeah, well, we had to look outside to find someone suitable. It just exposed the fact that they don't have faith in their talent. Their talent is not ready for this type of high level competition. Maybe Swole, maybe Baker, but they're in their own thing. That's a whole other context. But yeah, that just goes to show just how thin the division is and how little faith they have in the rest of the division as well. So that's, I'm okay with that. And it's okay that on your biggest show of the year, that you end up with a marquee match of two women's world's champions fighting each other. I don't know why people are nitpicking this. People should be excited. And Thunder Rosa, by the way, along with Allison Kay, had the best match in end of the NWA power era at Hard Times. They had a match, they had a world title match against each other. Notice, I didn't say best women's match. They had the best match of this run of the NWA right there. I have complete faith that Thunder Rosa is going to pull out something fantastic with someone of the caliber of Shida. It's going to be good. It's going to be good, good stuff. Mr. Fantastic is in the chat. How you doing? So that's also cool beans. Is Kenny Omega going cleaner? We got to talk about the heel turns here, guys. We got to talk about what's going on with the Elite. I think we're going to wrap it up on this, actually, because... Phew. So, there's a lot of moving parts to this. For weeks, people have been saying, Cody's turning heel. Look at how he's reacting. And I got on board with that as well. I'm like, yeah, he's clearly showing signs of frustration and anger, maybe taking some angles, some quick wins and so on and so forth. I'm like, I buy into that. I think this is something that's entirely possible. But then people are like, no, it's going to be Hangman Page who's going to turn. Look, he doesn't like Kenny Omega. He doesn't get along with the Bucks. He's going to turn heel, which is weird to me. And then tonight, as we saw on Dynamite, We had the Tag Team Gauntlet and the Young Bucks in their match against the Best Friends, the second to last match of the Gauntlet. Adam Page clearly comes and holds on to Nick Jackson's leg. And by the way, Best Friends versus the Young Bucks was a stellar match. Again, tonight, you should check it out. It was a good, good match. He prevents the Bucks from hitting the Meltzer driver and ultimately costs the Bucks the match. And they go backstage. A little later on, they find Hangman at the bar and they kick him out. They effectively kick him out of the Elite. You're no longer in the Elite. So I'm like, that's interesting. I still don't see the value in turning Hangman Page heel because he is so goddamn over. Now, you'll tell me there's no audiences, but the audiences are starting to trickle back in. He's one of their top baby faces. It's a weird decision for me to do that. And then we saw Kenny on Saturday getting a little miffed at the Bucks, right? He looked like he wanted to unload on them, but after the match against the Dark Order, but it didn't quite go that way. So is it Kenny? Kenny's showing some aggression. I think that they're sowing seeds for Kenny and Adam Page descent, and that's ultimately what's going to have them lose the titles to FTR at All Out. That's how I think it's going to go. Cody's out for a while. We'll see what happens. I still believe in this four horsemen situation where Cody is the leader. I really do. I think that the fact that he was using the figure four leg lock a lot, I don't think that was by mistake. He's a great promo. I think there's a lot of stuff they could do there. I don't understand how you could turn Adam Page, but clearly they're setting a breakup here. But I think we're all sort of missing the obvious here. I think the Young Bucks are the guys who turn. Or at least, look, I think the Young Bucks are those who effectively turn heel. Because they have been at the center of the Elite trying to keep everyone happy and holding on to everyone. No, stay here. No, don't be mad. Trying to keep the peace, putting up with Adam Page's stuff. Where the hell is Cody? Where has he been in the Elite? Now, Kenny Omega's acting up. Maybe they're just like, you know what? We're fed up of carrying you guys. We don't need this baggage. And they turn. And they keep like the name of the Elite. And go off and make the Elite with someone else. Because, you know, here's the thing. Here's one thing that a lot of people don't quite remember. The Young Bucks, in most of their indie tenure, were considered heels. They've been heels most of their career. And they're really good at it because, well, Matt Jackson's a smarmy little son of a bitch, isn't he? And it works really well. I would love to have some Young Bucks be... I would love to have some Young Bucks get in there as heels and surprise us all. And I think it'd work. I think it'd work better than Kenny going cleaner. Because here's the other thing. If you turn all your top singles guys heels, who's left as baby faces afterwards? You don't have that many. You have Mox that's up there, like really, really tippy top. Orange Cassidy could get there. I don't think he's tippy top yet, but he's not far. And at the same time, I understand that if you want to keep Mox your champion, if Mox wants to stay champion, you need a heel factory at the same time. Look, I think that there is going to be something very, very interesting here. Something very, very, very interesting that's going to happen. So yeah, I think we're going to wrap it up on this thing. Oh, MJF's contract signing. I'm sure you guys want to know my thoughts on MJF's contract signing, MJF and Mox's contract signing. Hang on, let me pull up the graphic here. And yeah, it was not good. It just was not good. It's the same thing. No, they didn't go through a table, but there was paperwork. They were all sitting around signing papers, and the big twist at the end was, oh, you get to fight the lawyer next week, John. I'm like, why? Frankly, MJF does not need all the artifice, the campaign shenanigans. He doesn't need it. He's so good all by himself. He really didn't need all of this. And tonight, I thought it was extremely heavy-handed and adds a wrinkle in this. You got to fight. Honest to God, you have to fight the lawyer before you get. And if the lawyer loses the match, then you whatever. That's a very WWE storyline kind of thing. Look, contract signings, until they find a way to have the dead rise from the grave to come deliver the contracts. I don't know. I honestly don't know what's the value, what's the benefit of having I don't know what the benefit is having of having contract signings. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's boring. Everyone talks. And it was a long segment. MJF is a good talker. John Moxley is a good talker. But there's no charm, no appeal, no drama, no effervescence. You don't get excited for this. No one gets excited for a contract signing. I'm sorry. You're like, might get excited at the idea of a contract signing, but it always sort of goes, ugh. It's always the same thing. So AEW hasn't cracked the code as of yet. Bring us back more weigh-ins, though. That was fun. That was fun. So was the weekly wrestling inspection. And there's still more stuff we could talk about. We could talk about Eddie Kingston being the great unifier. We could talk about we could go deeper on more WWE stuff. But look, we all have to move on with our lives here, folks. That's how it goes, right? Jason PS3, glad you could jump in here at the very, very last minute. But hey, I'm glad you guys did show up. I'm glad you guys came over at this special time tonight for the live recording. We'll be back to 9 p.m. Eastern next week, barring more cuckoo nonsense from AEW and NXT. We should be back next Thursday at our regular time of 9 p.m., and I really appreciate it. Remember, Saturday, got two shows lined up. Got a post show for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Summer Struggle in Jingu, 7:30 a.m. once the show's done, and then 11 a.m. with Vince Delgado to talk predictions for WWE Payback 2020. Come join us over on Patreon, patreon.com/MrWarrenHayes. Going to do the post show in a couple of minutes. We're going to start that with call-ins from the patrons. You have to be on the Discord for that. Link is in the description. And join the Discord, whether you're a patron or not. It's a cool place to hang out. Just like the Mr. Warren Hayes show on every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for coming, who did come out to join us, to join me this evening. I really appreciate it. You didn't have to, but I'm glad you did. I'm really... Oh, wait. Anakin left us a super chat. I almost forgot. Is it Hangman turning heel or just fed up with the Bucks and how they've treated him? I'd be fed up with the way the Bucks treat me. I really do. I agree. I really think that the Bucks are turning heel. That's my swerve. That's what I think we're going for. Anywho, we're wrapping it up now. Acer 5000, good to see you. Thank you for joining at the last possible moment. I'll see you guys next time.